Thank you for tuning in to The Entrepreneur Show, a discussion of all things entrepreneurial. Today's episode is going to be on crowdfunding and whether or not you can raise or make a million online. Today's episode is brought to you by the Westchester Digital Summit, which is a global gathering of the most innovative minds in the digital economy today. Find out more info at westchesterdigitalsummit.com. And now here's your host, Alan Brody.
Okay, welcome to The Entrepreneur Show. I'd like to introduce our crowdfunding panel. I'd like to begin with David Post with Benjamin Bakery, which is a crowdfunding site for the masses. Then we're going to meet the folks from Rock the Post, and we're going to meet Smart Money Entrepreneurs and MedStarter, which is a healthcare crowdfunding site. So I'd like to begin by introducing you to Alejandro Cremades, who's the founder of Rock the Post, which is a crowdfunding site for equity startups, startups seeking equity, and it's aimed at accredited investors. Alejandro, could you take a moment to tell us about Rock the Post and what you folks are doing right now?
Yeah, so we funded the company in 2010. We launched the first version of the product in 2011, and after operating for about a year, the donation space for startups, where we raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for several startups, we finally were able to shift to the equity model thanks to the partnership with the broker-dealer. So right now we're operating under Regulation D, Rule 506. We announced to the world that we were doing such shift on March 5th of this year. And so far on a weekly basis, we received an average of 550 companies that apply to Rock the Post to raise funds with us. And then we also receive on average around 355 accredited investors that register every week. So essentially the startups that come and raise on the platform are raising anywhere between 100,000 to 5 million. So that's essentially where we are at. We are okay. Only operating right now for accredited investors.
Got it. Let me understand this. So when you began in 2010, you began in the U.S., and were you equity or was it perk based? And we'll talk about the difference in a moment.
So we were on the reward crowdfunding space. So essentially, it was as simple as partnering up with a credit card processor partner and then accepting transactions. We were able to accept transactions all over the world, but now since we are dealing with securities as opposed to monetary contributions without any type of contractual obligations, it gets a little bit more complicated.
Right.
And we are only accepting investments from people in the U.S. and projects, offerings, issuers that are essentially located and based in the U.S.
So the reason I'm asking this is because we're seeing the transition, and this is the conversation here today, is the transition from companies like Indiegogo and Kickstarter, which were perk-based. There was no people gave money, but they had no equity. There was no financial relationship with the startups. And what we're doing here is we're getting into the transition to where people can actually invest in startup companies. And so you're saying that you were able to handle investments from the beginning because you were worldwide, but now you're focusing on the U.S. because in the U.S. you can only take U.S. investors. Is that correct?
Yeah, so on the donation, when we were operating with the reward crowdfunding space, we had presence in over 200 countries.
Okay.
But now only the investments that we're accepting is from people here located in the U.S.
Right.
Because for their due diligence purposes, it gets messy otherwise.
Got it. Okay. So once you go from rewards or perks, you got to live with the U.S. rules. So it's all about the U.S., folks. So, so let's move on to Jeremy Andrews with Smart Money Entrepreneurs. Tell us a little bit about your site, which I understand is focused on this is an equity crowdfunding site, and you're focused on people that have relationships with their brokerage houses.
Right. So essentially we're an equity, debt, and real estate platform, trading platform. More importantly, I think you know, we're in space that essentially allows for different types of investment vehicles. My background is in finance, tiger management, and therefore, as a former finance trader, it's really important for us to establish a consistent path to investment for people who may have invested before in the public stock market, and now for the first time are investing in private vehicles. So, you know, we're broker-dealer-based as well. We actually own broker-dealer more so than partnering for us to work better here.
Are you only going to focus on hard goods? In other words, either real estate or products that are debt-based, that somebody's actually giving collateral to the investors. Is that your focus?
The real estate portion. Right. So the focus, actually, the real estate portion is a hard, tangible asset. The way the real estate works is, you know, and we've done it this way because it's a little bit easier transition. Rather than do equity, your real estate portion is essentially a... Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, hello?
Okay. Yeah, I'm here. The real estate portion is a hard asset, and what we're doing is providing loan value. So if you look at a building that you're buying, essentially, instead of going to a bank, which may or may not lend, the crowdfunders are lending you a percentage of the value, so most likely 80% or 90% of that loan value, they're lending, and you pay that with interest and principal as you would a regular loan. So the real estate portion works in that way. Debt and equity side is essentially the same as a normal business. We deal actually in all industries: tech, hard goods, soft goods. It's virtually unlimited because we play in the space of seed capital.
So this enables you to go to market right now. In other words. Because
right, that is correct.
You don't have to wait for the
right,
big day.
You don't have to wait.
Right. So you don't have to wait for the big
right.
day.
You don't have to.
When the SEC releases the rules that enable equity crowdfunding companies to go into business. Which brings us
right.
to
we actually
go ahead.
We're actually raising for accredited and unaccredited investors as well. And I guess we'll go into that later how we're able to do so.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that in a moment. But in the meantime, The starting point for you folks is in debt-based and real estate, which is a very tangible, very interesting place to be. And you probably don't have a lot of competition there right now.
Right.
Is that correct? Oh, there you go. So let's talk about a place where there's tons of competition. That's the mass market. David Post, tell us about Benjamin Bakery. Now that the bakeries are in this business, you got my appetite going. Tell me more.
Well, we're not a bakery, but we do help people make dough, okay? So that's where that comes about.
So all that matters.
Our focus is really everybody, and on both sides, both everybody as a potential investor within the limitations of what the SEC is going to put in the rules, and any type of company that has a good story. So it could be, you know, somebody who has two restaurants who wants to open a third and they can't get anything from the bank. So the best thing for them to do is to crowdfund. So our focus is what we consider to be millions of companies who will need capital and tens of millions of people who never really had an opportunity to invest in small companies. And so that is our focus from a market standpoint. And for marketing, we have much more of our focus is about using the media in ways that you've seen in the past. If, you know, if you're a good singer, then you certainly want to be on The Voice, so you want to be an American Idol. And this is, if you're a good entrepreneur, we're going to help you get on television and tell your story. So every entrepreneur can be a star.
So let's talk about the folks that would invest in this. I mean, we definitely understand that the millions of people who need to raise money, that I got. But are there millions more that are willing to invest in those people? And how exactly does that work, from the consumer point of view?
Well, the platform brings the people together. That's really what it does. We don't get involved. We're not directly involved in making opinions or observations, because that's not what the platform is. The platform is to bring together the buyers and the sellers, and pretty much what, you know, what happened in NASDAQ, and as it went from the old days of NASDAQ to the new days. I think that where you don't know what the potential market's going to be for a specific company, they find each other. And we were just working on some things today that relate to, you know, if somebody is great at retail stores and they really understand it, and then they're investing in company XYZ, a lot of other people will follow them because they know that that person has a very good feel for retail.
So let me see if I understand this. I'm not sure what happened with NASDAQ before versus what happened with NASDAQ today. But if I understand this correctly, what you're saying is you provide people an opportunity to follow good investors. Is that correct?
They will find each other through ways that we have that are on our site,
okay,
through technologies that we bring, and through opinions of people who focus on, because they think this. They know that market. They know that technology.
But
and that information is available to everybody.
So let me take a moment.
That's what crowdfunding is about.
Right. But here's the thing. What we're going to do today is we're going to walk through a typical crowdfunding deal. In other words, somebody has an idea. What would they have who would they have to be? What would they have to have in order to be a good candidate for crowdfunding? How would they value their proposition, whether it's reward or perk-based, or whether it's equity, which is obviously the bigger thing? How do they set a value? What are their expectations? So that, and what do they have to do to bring that money in? Because I'm sure it doesn't happen by itself. The second thing that's for sure. The other thing I wanted to ask real quick, and from the investor perspective, what is what are the expectations of investors? What's an exit? What do they stand to get out of it? Because after all, they can invest in something, but at what point do you see the chickens come home to roost? So,
Are you asking me, Alan?
Whoever wants to jump on board, you tell us, when's payday for the investor? How does that work?
I think that that's going to be decided when the commission puts its rules out. What they say is that if you make an investment in an equity crowdfunding deal, you have to wait at least a year. Of course, that would change if somebody bought the company. But I think that that we are in such an infancy of where this market's going to be. And you know, I come out of cellular at the beginning, and nobody believed that business would be as big as it became. This situation is going to evolve. It's going to change with what people want to do. But you hold for a year. Well, what happens after a year? Will there be an exchange that you could put your stock on? So as people look at this, at least for a year, you don't have to think about it, whether you're an investor or a company. But they will have to have those new rules, and they will be in rules.
So as far as you're concerned, there's no reason why there wouldn't be some type of NASDAQ, some kind of a stock market of crowdfunded startups just to create liquidity.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. That's a good point.
It's not that I think. It will.
That will.
A little bit here. Our actual model is a little bit different. We're actually building a second market to compete with Second Market. The secondmarket.com, who's not familiar, is a secondary marketplace for startups. We're actually working with NASDAQ in terms of preliminary talks. We had spoken to them late last year, in terms of what they're looking to build. They're actually building this year, preliminary stage, is a platform for startups. And, you know, we had spoken with them initially about building a trading platform, you know, hence what we're doing already, for the private market, being that one doesn't exist for startups. So our platform specifically takes an entrepreneur who is raising equity or debt capital and takes them from the initial idea concept, raising the initial seed round, all the way through Second Market. So the whole transaction and the multiple rounds of transactions take place within our platform all the way through exit, which, as mentioned, may be an acquisition may also be dividends.
Just want to remind listeners that's Jeremy Andrews with Smart Money Entrepreneur. And what Jeremy is saying is that you will actually enable as the regulations and the partnerships open up, you'll enable the entrepreneurs on your crowdfunded site to go into a trading market, into some type of liquidity market, whether it's second market. Are you actually going to compete with second market, or are you going to bring them to second market, and or you'd bring them to some vehicle that you said that NASDAQ has in the works?
Right. So the NASDAQ is what we're working with. NASDAQ actually does not like what Second Market is doing. So we're actually going head-to-head with them and being a kind of repository for all the other equity debt platforms, being that the 12 months was mentioned, you know, 12 months was quick from our perspective. And so all the we're looking at being a repository for all of the platforms that are out there for equity and debt perspective that we have been speaking with will eventually offload their deal flow from the initial deal flow after 12 months onto a second market, which will be our platform through our APIs. So that's kind of what we're building, and our demo of the entire platform is launching early this summer, around June, if not mid-June.
Okay, so I understand that you. So for the folks who don't know, second market is a place where early stage investors can turn their early investments into liquidity, into cash, or try to find
right.
somebody who will buy their positions in a
right.
in an early stage company. So the idea is that NASDAQ obviously sees this as some type of competition, and so they're planning for the future. Does that mean that you will partner with you're really hoping to partner or bridge into NASDAQ, not become like a NASDAQ?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's sort of news.
That's right. I mean, the actual negotiations that we're speaking with started in November. You know, I can't say specifically, but essentially we reached out to them, and they had expressed, they said they were building a platform for startups. The NASDAQ is, you know, doing that. But we reached out because we felt that their alignment of goals with what they were building already were kind of in the same alignment with us. And therefore, you know, when we demo this product in this summer, they are an interested party in terms of connecting our systems together.
This is really interesting. So does this mean that one day we'll walk into a mall and you can buy a pair of jeans for $20 or jeans and a stock for $25?
Right. Well,
that's how it's going to work?
That's the ideal.
You don't need to go to the mall.
You don't need to go to the mall.
You do it on the app, right?
You could just call JCPenney and say, listen, if you need a new business model, we have it for you right here. That's a joke. Oh, Mr. Johnson.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty good. Okay.
Right, yeah, exactly.
All right, you heard that here first, folks. So we're going to come back. This is sort of news, but we are going to come back and sort of work our way through the process of a startup with an idea. But I do want to introduce you to Serena Walker, who is the CEO of Athena Business Institute, and Serena is involved in helping women find funding, and there is a real gap in the entrepreneur world. Serena, why don't you tell us about that and let us know if crowdfunding might be an opportunity for the women who have become, and apparently are now dominating, the future of entrepreneurship.
Definitely. Thanks, Alan. I was inspired to start the Athena Business Institute after I read a statistic that women only receive 5% of the equity funding in this country. And then after reading a subsequent statistic that they're starting businesses at 1.5 times the rate of men. So by 2020, if that continues, we will begin to overtake the number of businesses owned by men. So I realized there was a huge gap in terms of the information that women had about funding options. And crowdfunding is actually one of the sources that we talk about as a non-traditional source of funding. So basically about 20% of what I talk about is traditional, and 80% is non-traditional. Yeah, definitely.
Now, at this point in time, Serena, are you aware of any crowdfunding site, whether it's reward based or equity based, that focuses on women entrepreneurs?
Not that I know of. Could be out there, but haven't found it yet.
All right, so
you could bet on the fact that there is one. Has to be.
Yeah.
You know.
Has to be, but I haven't found it yet. So if you guys know, let me know.
Why bet on it when I can invest on it?
We can talk. Our platform actually is interesting. I guess we'll do it later. But we actually allow investors to
one of the feature segment, you know, if you're looking for specifically a woman-owned business or a, you know, minority-owned business, or if you're looking for students who developed, you know, businesses from Harvard, what our platform does for investors, it allows you to filter based upon certain, you know, demographic, categorical features, and, you know, helping people make decisions and find businesses that they're looking to promote. We talk to a lot of investors, and a lot of times they're in a specific sector, but they also like to support different types of businesses, different types of entrepreneurs, and we look at the whole global perspective of crowdfunding in the communities out there. Look at business in general from, you know, the earliest days of transactions. Different communities, different entrepreneurs, whether it's minority, female entrepreneurship, the immigration entrepreneurship, that's kind of a big topic in Congress, is what we're supporting as well with the Startup Act. So a lot of different segments, and we on our platform allow investors to go in and focus on, based on filters, different types of entrepreneurs. So we're really, really proud of that, and I think it's something that from our data research will be heavily used.
Well, you know, and I understand that the platform is amenable to that, and that's great. However, I do know that from the experience of microfinance, such as the Grameen Bank, there's something in Africa called Shared Interest, which sponsors similar types of crowdfunding, microfinancing operations in Africa. They only lend to women.
Definitely different. I mean, right. Being able to segment it is great, but having a very specific target market, it's definitely different because you can lend different support.
Right. So the
it's still a good thing to hear. I'm glad Jeremy's doing that.
Right. So the structure of the microfinance is quite different than what you get from the bank, and it's not just about the size of the financing. It's the way in which it's managed. They actually have support teams. There's a lot of handholding. Among the women, and there's a lot of community support, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just curious if you have or envisage seeing those kinds of features appear in, you know, your segmented crowdfunding sites.
So,
Alan? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think it's also noteworthy that women tend to be better at raising crowdfunding. I don't know if it's overall, but from MedStarter, which is...
Let me introduce you. Alex, let me stop you right there because we didn't see you sneak upon us. So I'm going to introduce you to Alex Fair, who is the CEO of MedStarter, which is the only healthcare-focused crowdfunding site.
That's actually not true, Alan. I'm sorry.
There's another one that appeared?
There's another one.
Well, we're going to have to stop that right there. That's okay, but you're at least, if not the first.
I'm good.
If you're not the first, you're certainly one of the first.
Well, we were the first out of the gate, and we're the ones who actually figured out how to make it work.
Fine.
So I guess that is important.
Okay.
Introduce yourself real quick.
And then please pick up the baton on the issue about women and crowdfunding.
Absolutely. So my name is Alex Fair. I started MedStarter.com, MedStarter, written off that last name. We started it almost exactly a year ago with the intent of making it a lot easier for healthcare-specific startups to get funded. Kickstarter does not allow healthcare projects. Indiegogo, while it allowed healthcare projects, none of them were successful. There was one that was successful at the time, and it was a movie about healthcare. So I had a startup. I have a startup called FairCareMD, which was struggling, and I wanted to get it crowdfunded. And so I discovered this problem and an opportunity. So I launched an alpha April 27th. I put two projects on it, MedStarter and FairCare, FairCareMD.com. Still exists. It's a Priceline for healthcare. People funded MedStarter. They didn't really fund FairCare that much, so I knew what to focus on. And we started building this platform that, you know, has helped dozens of companies raise hundreds of thousands of dollars in aggregate, online and off. They've raised over $6 million. And this is only rewards-based online, rewards and donation-based. But what happens offline, even before the Jobs Act or Crowdfunder Sub Act are clarified, is that we
engage a lot of the right people. People who are interested in healthcare, the right private equity, angels, VCs, and guys like Dave Chase, who created Avada, which is a really cool physician-patient engagement tool. So something that connects your Fitbit to your doctor and any other device you have, for example. So he raised $7,500 on MedStarter, but then he raised $1 million on AngelList afterward. And using the same methodologies and audience, and he basically showed that he could crowd test before he invested.
Got it. So there's a real powerful value in reward-based crowdfunding in terms of enabling investors to figure out who the winners are, so and pick winners. So there's a test run element to crowdfunding. But just for the moment, let me focus on what makes healthcare different from other kinds of crowdfunding. And any of you other folks, tell us what area that you know of is stickier than others. Starting with healthcare, and let's move on to any other sticky areas.
Okay, I can speak to healthcare very briefly. Our stuff isn't just a widget or some really cool device. Stuff that really matters. It might be a new drug to treat a particular type of cancer. It might be something that helps you get through the day if you've got Crohn's disease. So this stuff really matters. And the second thing that's different is that it takes a lot more money in healthcare, right? So you can't develop a blockbuster drug for $50,000, okay? It usually takes about $500 million. It's a harder problem. Okay. On the other hand, it's more important. So the stakes are bigger and everything like
so,
that.
So being in a trial space is actually quite a big deal in the healthcare arena. How about you other folks? Any David or Alejandro?
Yeah, one of the areas that has been very successful has been in games.
Okay.
Some of the most funded projects were games and technology for games. And the reason for it is it's very easy to give somebody something to give a reward or a perk or something that allows them to do it. So, and there's usually a game is a spinoff of some other game or created by somebody who's well known in the gaming space. So that happens to be a market that does very well. There are, if you're talking about Kickstarter or Indiegogo, they're very heavily focused on, movies and books and things
right.
like that.
Right,
I don't know if anybody here is going to focus on that, but that is, that's the creative process.
Right.
And equity crowdfunding it's not a good fit for that.
Right.
At least in my opinion.
Well, that's a good point you've raised there, David, with Benjamin Bakery.
Alan, I would like to add on that, if possible. I would say that the reward space is completely different from the equity. On the reward space, people really get involved with a project, a campaign, because of two reasons, really. One, because they are moved with the story of the project creator, or two, because they want the tangible reward that is given in return. So really, the projects or the companies that post in there are more related on the consumer. For example, the tech companies would probably struggle a little bit more because they don't have that reward, tangible reward, to give in exchange for the contributions that they receive. But really on the equity side, for example, tech companies do fantastically well because the companies that are going to be able to give that returns to investors in a time frame of 5 years are the ones that are high growth companies. So those are the ones that are able to find a liquidity event in which the investor will be able to get their investment back.
Okay.
So those are the companies, for example, that we focus on now in the equity space. That's why we feel that tech, consumer, and also hardware startups are going to be the ones that are going to be providing those type of exits to the investor. But in any case, investing in startups is risky. So that's something that people need to know prior, obviously, to making investment.
Right. So Alejandro, what you're saying is if you want to go for the money, you want to go for equity crowdfunding. If you want to have some fun, then you go for the rewards, which may be games, music, and so on. But let me ask you this. It's pretty well known that Kickstarter was begun essentially for the music industry, and then it became, much more widely, useful to media and ideas and books and so on. Indiegogo originally started for the movie industry. and it evolved. Curious about you folks. We know about Alex and MedStarter is for healthcare. But how about you other folks? What's the sort of the territory? What's the background or the terroir to say Benjamin Bakery or Rock the Post? Tell us about the background, the name, and the area that you're really coming out of.
You want me to go?
Alejandro? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, it's David.
David.
We looked at kind of the beginning of this business. I told you, I started in the very beginning of cellular, and everybody says, oh, that and wireless is for, you know, doctors and lawyers and everybody else. I'll leave a message, you know. And then it became, you know, everybody on earth practically, you know, has a cell phone. Well, I think that's the approach that's going to happen here. It could be anything and anybody with a great idea. Okay. I don't look at, yes, there's lots of very interesting markets.
Okay.
And the question I'm asking, want scalable businesses.
Right. So, but the question I'm asking is, and I think I'm getting to an answer here, is number one, how did Benjamin, what made you Benjamin Bakery, the crowdfunding site? And the other part is that it sounds like you're looking to bring them to TV. That's part of your DNA. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? So tell us about
yes,
the Benjamin Bakery.
That is
Bakery.
Part of our DNA.
Who is okay, Benjamin?
So,
and
I picked Benjamin Bakery because it was an easy name to remember, and nobody else was doing anything like that. So it just was a play on words, and that was the reason for it.
Okay.
But we, you know, everybody in our company comes out of, you know, technology and media. And because of that, we look at this and you say, okay, the most successful television show, not of all time, but of recent times, has been American Idol. And okay, what is American Idol? If you break it down into the components, it's not about the judges. It's about who is appealing to the people out there. So I look at that and say, that's the way this industry will go. That people will be enchanted by a person, uh-huh, or by an idea, or right, by the way they present that idea, and so right, we will use the mass media to do that.
Okay, I got the picture, and I agree with you, except that I just wondered if you've told that to Nicki Minaj, that it's not about the judges. Does she know that?
That was
okay.
You know,
and
the
don't tell
the
Simon.
So,
okay,
because I had about 3-4 months of meetings with the original American Idol group, and this is not the season because Bob Silliman sold the company, but it was about that, you know.
It was original.
In the end, it's not about the judges. The judges get you there, and the judges have fun with the judges on the auditions. But when you come to the reality, you will like somebody, and you won't like somebody else. And that
okay,
is really what it's all about here, too.
Okay, well, that explains your point of view. You see this as a kind of a personality inventor, an inventor personality contest, if you will.
Shark Tank is, you know, Shark Tank's about the judges because they're putting their own money up, and the others are not about that.
Ah, okay,
it's about how good is the person. You
okay,
know?
Fair enough.
You don't remember what was on Shark Tank. You remember the judges.
I do. Actually, I disagree. I remember, and not only do I remember, but I know people who tell me, did you see that mop that I saw on Shark Tank episode number 7? In fact, I was at the dollar store a couple of weeks ago, and I saw a product that was in Shark Tank about a year ago. So,
I have to agree. This is Alejandro from Rock the Post. One of the projects that we funded when we had the reward, the site, it was Vidi Custom Bicycles. It's one of the biggest success stories
right,
on Shark Tank. It was funded by Barbara Corcoran and also
right,
Mark Cuban.
Yeah, I remember.
You would ask people, and they would remember the
yeah,
project.
Remember the
in
deals.
Fact, they were able to raise over $10,000 on our platform in less than a week.
Is that right?
So, people actually remember only the budgets, but also the good projects
right,
that are
right,
on that show.
Yeah, I have to tell you, Dave.
I think one of the things that David is saying, though, is that in crowdfunding, and this is something that I agree with 1,000%, is that judges may not have said, yes, we'll give you the funding, but the crowd does, and therefore they get the funding. So
right,
it's a very different dynamic in terms of the kinds of businesses that are going to get funding on a crowdfunding platform versus the kind of companies that are going to get funded by investors. And that's also the difference between, which we haven't really touched on yet, is the difference between rewards, equity, and debt.
Well,
they are all completely different markets.
Yeah, that's a great point. Absolutely. If you look at the projects that have been getting funded with us, I mean, would you invest in a peer-to-peer nonprofit? No, you wouldn't. But people with that disease definitely will.
That's the next part of our show is that we're going to talk about what products work well in which type of crowdfunding platform. So we will get to it. But, guys, I just have to tell you that in the case of that little discussion, we did sort of come around to agreeing with David that it's about the idea and the person, not really about the adjudicators, the judges, even in the case of Shark Tank.
Well, no, it depends. It depends on the platform, Alan. I would disagree with that.
Oh, you would?
Our platform.
You know what?
Our platform.
All I want to say is, and I want to quote one of the contestants in American Idol, and that is, I beg to differ. That's all I want to say. That is not a judge. That's a contestant who didn't win, but she just had the great line. So, We all have our own points of view, and we all have our own inclinations, and that's the beauty of crowdfunding, is that you can beg to differ and put your money where your mouth is. So why don't we talk about what really happens when somebody has an idea? And I'm going to ask each of you to pick an example and maybe even a counterexample. Who's done well, and maybe even somebody hasn't done as well, and so that we can kind of understand the difference and what they had to do to get their money. And I do want to preface this real quick by saying that if anybody reads the newspapers, they're going to come upon a sort of a viral story like, Joe put his thing on Kickstarter, and the next thing you know, $1 million showed up. And we all know that's not really what happened. That he went through a lot of trouble, and then maybe he got lucky, but it didn't happen by itself. So why don't we just talk about each case? Why don't we start with Alejandro, and then Alex, tell us a little bit about some specific examples that have done well and one that hasn't done quite as well.
So, for example, on the, just to differentiate the rewards and the equity, the rewards, now that you're talking about ideas, when someone comes with an idea, the way to do it would be to go to a reward-based crowdfunding site, because that's where you are able to get the money to create that compelling story in order to attract investors down the road. So once you have already the company, then it's the time to go and apply to an equity crowdfunding platform and the time to be able to accept investments. So as for example, on our side, on Rock the Post, when we receive applications and we receive 550 on a weekly basis, what we really try to identify is first the compelling story, the uniqueness and also the traction. But it all comes down to first the team, second the market, and then it's the product, because the product, it can be iterated several times. So, that's essentially the way we see things. We obviously do a due diligence on every single project before it's posted on the platform. So we potentially pick one out of 600. So it's a process of around 2 weeks, go through all the materials and everything
That's a good differentiation right there, because what you're saying is you're talking now about equity. So number one, you're a gatekeeper. You only take 1 in 600, which is actually worse odds than angels who take 1 in 100. And you're looking at the maturity of the team and the addressable market, and then the product. Prior to that, you did rewards. Now, or rewards or perks. Now, in rewards or perks, were you that selective, or did you let everybody come on board? Like Indiegogo lets anybody come on board. Kickstarter adjudicates.
Yeah, so with the reward site, we were actually mentioned by Time with Kickstarter and Indiegogo as one of the best crowdfunding platforms in the world. And on that article, it said that we were the exclusive site in the business. So we're committed to helping out, because it was like a partnership. We was not like, for example, on Indiegogo, anyone can post stuff. We were more about receiving the application and then deciding to move forward or not. And on the reward side, for example, the average amounts of of money that are raised is between $5,000 to $25,000, which is completely different as to how it works on equity, where you get anywhere from $100,000 to $5 million potentially on our side because we're a broker dealer operating the regulation D Rule 506. But it's just a different scenario. I mean, on the reward side, we were still very picky because we are all about quality versus quantity.
Right. So what was your success? What was your success rate? I mean, not the success ratio, but what was your acceptance ratio in when you were doing rewards?
So on the rewards, since we were a little bit more picky, the success rate was a little bit higher than the average crowdfunding platform. So it was around 45% success rate. And now on the equity side, we're still quite the platform is still in its infancy, so it's a little bit early to give you a success rate. But since we are doing very high due diligence process on every company, we're getting even more involved now to help the company to fundraise. I would say that it could be a little bit higher.
Okay, so when you got applications, you accepted about half. Was that your acceptance rate in rewards based?
So on the rewards base, I would say that we would pick maybe 1 out of 10.
1 in 10. Wow.
Or not even.
That's very picky. So yeah, let me ask you, what? Tell us about Rock the Post. How did you come up with it? It's obviously not about rock and roll music. So tell us how you came up with Rock the Post and why it got to be so picky.
Yeah, so we founded the company in 2010 before crowdfunding, the word was really even born. We didn't even know that Obama was going to amend some laws from the 1930s. But we always wanted to give the money to startups. We wanted to do securities. We wanted to do equity at the beginning, but our lawyers thought that we were completely crazy. So once we were able to get a little bit more successful with the reward side, then we were able to convince some people that we could execute well. So the name Rock the Post really came from the fact that every single offering or every single startup that posts on our site is a post. So you need to rock the post in order to be successful.
There you go, rock the post. So if you made a record out of that, you could crowdfund that on Kickstarter and never mind. Okay, so Alex, give us an example of what has taken place positively, and it's been real successful on your side, and perhaps a counterexample that hasn't been quite as successful, and give us an idea why.
Right. Okay. So I'm a really big fan of RocketPost, about what you guys are doing, but healthcare is different. We see our projects as being too important to fail. So, what you guys probably get in a week, we probably have gotten in our entire, life. We treat them each as precious things, right? So we help them. So whereas Indiegogo or Kickstarter is extremely DIY, and also, is by people who went to business school or design school, not med school or grad school, we know our people need more help. So we had a PhD economist who got breast cancer. Her name is Kara Gorski. And she had a double mastectomy and reconstruction. Her mother died at about the same age she was at the time, 37 versus 42, I think. And her sister also got a double mastectomy prophylactically, which means, before she actually got cancer. So they knew that they had this mutation, that they were going to get cancer. They both dealt with it in their own aggressive ways and then got reconstruction. And then they found they couldn't find a bra that fit them. Okay, so they got out the sewing machine, and actually they weren't really seamstresses, but they figured it out. And they made a bra that worked for women who had post-breast cancer reconstructive surgery. Okay, so very important thing. Most of them in my family, have had breast cancer and for generations to come well as well. So it's something that is important to me as well. So when Kara came to us, and even though she didn't really have a social media presence, she wasn't a rock star, she didn't know the head of the U.S. Army's, breast cancer, buying division or any of these things. We helped her package up her project and sort of get the story out there, which is a very evocative story, get it into, the first press that happened for them, and then finally into the New York Times and the ABC News and make the deal with the U.S. Army and get into distributors and get into Body Magazine, which is a lingerie magazine, for buyers and stores. So it really, changed everything for them. Yes, they raised $12,000, but they also got amazing press and all sorts of great stuff. take the other side of the story. So that's a great story. That's kind of something we do. We facilitate.
So what you're saying is that you helped them, groomed their product, got them press, got them some money. Were they planning to get, did they set a target on that?
Yeah, they had originally set a target of 5,000 and they got 12,000.
Okay, great.
But, you know, they didn't expect to get on to ABC News and things like that.
Okay,
I mean,
so you got them press.
All we really do is package it and then present them opportunities. So we help them sort of put their story together in a way that people will understand and help them build a wave of support. Well, so once they got 15 people saying, yes, I want one of those bras, you know, before they even went into production, you know, then, you know, they could get, you know, the stores, the boutiques to actually say, yes, you know, we want to carry your bras.
Okay, and let me understand this. In all cases, the sites are getting, what, is it a 5% commission on the raise?
Well, we've got different models. We do 5% for a DIY approach where we give some coaching and some facilitation, but if somebody's got their story figured out, we don't really need to help them that much. If they need more help, we have a partner program where we'll partner with them and give them 20 hours of effort for 10% of what's raised.
Okay.
And then if we really love a project like Rock the Post, we'll get involved and we'll accelerate them and give them a lot of time. And that's a completely different deal.
Right, so I'm going to talk about what the crowdfunding folks get. But and you had a less sort of exciting example. Is that correct, Alex?
I want other people to tell us their story. So I'm just going to be very quick. HealthcareMD, my site, the first site that I had created when I came back to healthcare, nobody funded it. So what do? We learn, and I know how to package things, right? So what do? We basically made it freemium model, decided that doctors and patients didn't want to pay for a price transparency solution, and just put advertising on the site. And now it's profitable. So it's important, the lessons you learn from a good project or a bad project.
So generally speaking, the more tangible, the better, or the bigger the upside on the crowdfunding side. I mean, the equity crowdfunding
side. It doesn't have to be tangible at all sometimes. It can be just, you know, evocative. It could be just a donation for a medical mission to Africa or something.
On healthcare, right. And there was one fellow who raised like $50,000 and then went out and raised millions afterwards. And he had like the worst video I've ever seen. You want to tell us about that real quick?
Yeah. You're talking about Fred Trotter?
Yeah.
He got 24 partners to buy into his data set. But the people, you know, it's all about who your audience is. His audience were healthcare geeks. So they're not a healthcare geek.
Right. And
you know,
And what he did was he cracked the code on how to rate doctors.
Yep.
Exactly. And he did that by getting government information to figure out who doctors refer each other to.
It didn't hurt to have Tim O'Reilly behind you.
Yeah, and Tim O'Reilly behind. Okay, great. So anybody else have a story before I ask you about the business models on the equity side?
I want to just make one comment. A lot of the things are being vetted inside. And to me, the essence of crowdfunding is the crowd.
Exactly.
And if you have something that you're doing and some people will like it and some people won't.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is the crowd is there.
Let the people
and
decide.
And because the crowd communicates with each other, they are a great vetting mechanism on their own.
Right. That's why
I think that's why our approach is as it is.
I got it. You beg to differ. That's why it's called crowdfunding. The crowd should decide. And the other sites, not picking sides, but the other sites have decided to get ahead of the crowd and do some deciding themselves. That's a fair point. So let's talk about okay. I mean, if you have a comment, I'll take it. But just want to make the differentiation. Not all sites really let the crowd decide, but completely. They do some grooming. It's okay. So my question here is, tell us just a little bit, the equity folks. How do you monetize that? Do you take a percentage? Do you take the same percentage? Like, what is your take on the transactions?
I'd like to go first only because I can't give you an answer. It's going to be decided by the SEC.
Any questions I can't answer,
you can't charge a percentage. And we're talking now about equity, non-accredited investor deals,
so you
which
don't
is
going to
be 95%. But right. they have not decided yet
okay. so we're waiting
whether or not you are allowed to okay. charge a percentage.
I got it. I still want to say this, that any question that I don't have an answer for, I'd like to be the first one to answer. It's okay, David.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
I want the crowd, you know.
Alejandro, but Alejandro and Jeremy are in a different space. So how do you charge the investors or actually the
just to build on what David is saying, the platforms that are operating today for accredited investors, they're able to monetize only in the event they're acting as the broker-dealers, online broker-dealers. So once, the commission is very similar to what happens on the reward space. So, you know, depends obviously on the amount charged, but it ranges between 5 to 7%.
Okay. Jeremy?
Yes. Ours is, it's a various model. We take percentage on the back end, and we have a small application fee, which is $25 for entrepreneurs. And really, that's it.
Okay.
But we also, because our model is subscription-based for investors, so they pay a subscription fee to be access real-time data and financials from the startups. They can build books from the startups on our platform.
That's very interesting. So we have a pretty good idea of how. Let's discuss what does an investor have to do to get that kind of money. I understand that in Alex's case, you did a lot of the heavy lifting. You got the PR and so on and so forth. But most crowdfunding sites basically leave it up to you to do the marketing. So what kind of work and how much work would an investor have to do, and over what period of time, by the way, to raise money on a crowdfunding site?
You're talking about the company, not the investor.
Right? I'm sorry, I meant the company. Did I say investor? I meant the entrepreneur. So an entrepreneur
has... the biggest problem out there right now is that most crowdfunding operations expect the company to do the heavy lifting.
Right.
And we are, because most of us in Benjamin Bakery are very understanding of that. We are going to have kind of a ready-made list of prospective investors who have registered and are willing to look at deals. So that means that's a circle. You know, the way the whole crowdfunding world is, the inner circle is you and your family and your friends. And then the second circle are the friends of your friends. And that's pretty much how it goes, because the Indiegogo and the other ones, they don't tell you anybody else that this is up to you to get the money. We're looking at it and saying, hey, there's other people out there. Let's open up a third and a fourth circle. And that's the way we're approaching it.
And the third and fourth circle...
Let me ask you this, David. Are you talking for the equity model or for the reward model?
The reward model is, you know, that's everybody's in one circle. Here it's really, you know, how do you have people get to know what you're doing? And so I think that when people start to invest in a deal, they'll invest in other deals. I got my start in Wall Street, so I look at that and I said, you know, I did small companies, and it was cocktail party chatter.
Okay.
Today, nobody talks about the stock market because nobody knows, you know, how to make money, because it's all done by, you know, sophisticated machines.
So you're looking at mass publicity. Yeah, go ahead, Alejandro.
So I agree with you, David, at the beginning, especially for the rewards, that the traffic to your project is going to come directly and indirectly from the first and second degree connections. That's going to create the traction, and that's going to invite others that don't know you to join. However, on the equity side, and this is what David was saying, I have to disagree with the marketing strategy, because right now with the general solicitation rule, it's hard to do such marketing. So, for example, on the reward, going back to the rewards, on Kickstarter, only 16% of the donations come from the actual community. So on the equity side, the way it's going to work is basically that people are going to pull together as investors in that platform and they invest in the company. So anything, you know, any marketing that is done on the offline world needs to be done in a very delicate manner, because of how regulations are right now covering that space, especially with this general solicitation. But I assume that once that general solicitation is lifted, then things would change, and possibly that theory that David was speaking could come into place. But at this point, platforms are very limited. with how the marketing can be done.
Right, but the question
is... Well, Alan, why don't we talk about, because I'm going to have to jump here shortly, why don't we talk about the Jobs Act and how that's actually going to change the way that debt and equity platforms can...
Fair enough. We're going to wrap in a few minutes, but so I just want to, I'll put this together and either, you know, elaborate or tell me if I'm wrong, beg to differ. So if I understand this correctly, in the reward space, you really have to work through your friends because there's no real value involved. There's no upside other than the goods that you bring to the table and the people who know you. So you've got to launch a campaign using social media. Typically, if I understand this correctly, it's about a three-month proposition, and you have to put a closure to it because you've got to promise to deliver people a certain reward or perk within a certain amount of time. And it's a lot of hard work, and you're under the gun, and you suddenly find that you're working like crazy every day to get that money. Whereas in the equity world, you are really in the business of interesting investors in the potential upside of the business, and that's a somewhat different proposition, and it doesn't require as much flim-flam or social media work. It's more of a making a business presentation on a sort of a rational basis to people who think they can make money. Was that a fair differentiation?
I'm going to disagree with you because a great reward is going to drive a market, and I've seen it. You know, we've been watching this thing for the last year very carefully. So somebody who's never heard of this and they don't have a big following, they come up with something that has this incredible, you know, think about PBS. How does PBS raise money? They raise money two ways. Every time there's a commercial, they could do something, but they also give rewards at certain times. Okay. So the rewards are very important.
But you need a publicity vehicle. So if you don't have then you're going to provide a publicity vehicle.
Yes.
Okay. So you other folks.
I would also disagree, Alan.
Sure.
Just based on statistics, not most of that first circle is friends and family. It's about 30% of what's raised is from friends and family, at least in our experience.
Okay.
So, you know, once you get over that critical threshold, all sorts of really cool stuff happens, especially
right.
If people want your reward.
Okay, but that brings me back to the you know, the viral issue. Before you go viral, you need your friends and family to prime the pump. Is that a fair? You can't go in there with a zero. Is that fair to say in the reward
That's
base?
That's pretty good assessment.
Okay, now in the equity based world, is that the same thing? Do you need to go in with the prime pump, or can you go in there with a zero and say, "I have a great idea. We're all going to get rich. Fund me."
You need to have that core group. I mean, it's like what they're going to look at is they go and they see your company and it's XYZ and it looks interesting, and then they look and see how much has been funded already.
Okay.
They don't want to be the first one.
They don't want to be the first.
Not the way people...
So there's going to be a little premium for people who want to be the first.
All right, okay. Alan, I've got to jump because my conference call is coming in.
Oh, it's
so,
okay. We understand that.
It was a pleasure. And I look forward to hearing you later.
Thank you for joining us. And so I want to thank you all for joining us. I think we're about to wrap. Our last question is this, and you folks are definitely the ones to answer this one. So if people can raise $1 million, how about you guys? Are you looking to raise money, or can you raise your own money for your own site online?
That's a very loaded question. At least from my standpoint, we looked at it and we said, you know, that would be pretty embarrassing. We go in there and look for, you know, $800,000 and we only get $200.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the one thing I say to anybody who is going to listen to this, always underestimate what you want. So that if you say I want to do $200,000, then you better ask for $100.
Okay,
and find a way to live on the $100. And if you do $200 or you do $300, then you could say, "Hey, we went in for $100, we got $300."
Okay,
so
good point.
That is basically the way I think it.
I completely agree with you, David, on that. I think people need to be humble and grounded and conservative in order to not only reach their goals, but to go over the goals, because once they, right. they go over that the goal that they've established, then other people are going to be impressed.
They look
and
good.
Then they'll want to be part of it as well.
So the rule is to aim low and dream high. But here I'm gonna ask a similar question in a different way, and we'll close on this. And that is, last night we met a bunch of investors, and we had presentations. One of the presentations that was highly rated was, in fact, a crowdfunding site. But then I overheard the investors talk about who they should pick as the winner of the event. It's one of our events. It's called Startup Palooza. And by the way, there's going to be Startup Palooza next week in White Plains, and one again in that's the 19th, and one again in New York, and Innovator Evening on the 24th at Loeb & Park Avenue. But one of those investors that's tied up in those kinds of events was overheard saying, why should we pick the crowdfunding site? Let them fund themselves through crowdfunding. So the question is, how do other investors feel about you guys? Do they see you as friends, enemies, or just not quite sure what to make of you? How do traditional VCs see
you? I'll give a quick answer to that, because I got people standing outside my door here. I think that whatever you do on your own has got to be a success. So if you do it the traditional way, or you do it the crowdfunding way, I mean, we're looking at, we think the big guys are going to be in this business. So we're talking to the big guys now and okay. saying, hey, we're going to be an opportunity for you to see a market of tomorrow.
Okay.
And it's going to happen. And if you don't think it's going to happen, you better wake up.
All right. So you're a preview market for the big guys. Anybody else want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I agree with David again on this one. I think we published, my co-founder published an article on Forbes 3 weeks ago. And on that article, it basically mentions how by 2020, all the venture capital firms that are investing in early stage startups and that have under management $200 million, then they're going to have to either start considering investing on crowdfunding platforms, or they're going to have to probably do other jobs, because in the end of the day, it's a no-brainer for an entrepreneur to be able to fundraise themselves between 60 or 90 days, like, for example, we do it here on Rock the Post, as opposed to having to do the 8-month roadshow, which is a big emotional toll, not only for the founders, but also for the entire team.
Okay, they got to get on board. Jeremy, any thoughts from Jeremy?
As a former trader, I look at it from a different perspective, you know, different than venture capital angels. And I think, you know, it's definitely correct. I mean, the future is crowdfunding. And even from our platform, you know, providing real-time financials, it's a private market that has never been developed compared to the public markets that we're building. So it's coming.
And Alex, you've definitely rocked the healthcare world with MedStarter, and you just leave out the E at the end for healthcare. That's a joke. It's a joke that only works in countries that leave off the H, but that's okay. Folks, I want to thank you.
The last joke
of the day. Folks, I want to thank you all for joining us today. It's a fascinating insight into the changing world of the VC establishment brought about by crowdfunding. So I want to thank MedStarter. I want to thank Smart Money Entrepreneurs. I want to thank Benjamin Bakery. And finally, we've got to rock the post. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.